Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in the show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. I think you will. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. My name is Zach Birch. We got a very special guest, returning champion from at least half a decade ago. He's one of our first guests back in the day. He's voice actor extraordinaire. You can see him on the streaming show Critical Role, where he plays Dungeons & Dragons for like 3 or 4 hours a week. And you can also hear him in a million things. He's the voice of the Red Skull in all the Marvel cartoons. You've probably heard him there. And in basically every big video game, he's also on the new Transformers cartoon. But enough with the credits. Liam O'Brien, thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Wow. We were just sort of kibitzing before we actually started recording. And I really just want to reiterate that I cannot believe that 5 years have gone by. I mean, this podcast feels newer to me even.
Really?
But I guess this happens to everyone as they get old.
I guess so, yeah. Like, 2 years ago feels like yesterday.
Yeah.
It's like, but yeah. That movie just came out. No, it didn't.
And I see, when I see a college student now, they look about 8 years old to me.
Right.
So
yeah, right.
It's the cycle of life.
Well, it's been a long time since we've talked to you. But for listeners who maybe haven't heard the story of young Liam becoming a voice actor, can we get the sort of TV edit version of that story?
Absolutely. I am pushing 40 now, almost there. But I got in when I was just fresh out of college. I was just a little dipstick kid who did acting in high school, and then I went to NYU to study that, and then I did theater for a lot of years. And as I was doing theater, I stumbled into the world of dubbing anime.
Right.
And did it for a couple of years in New York, and then moved to LA and did it for many years in Los Angeles. And then at some point, dubbing anime linked into working on Japanese games connected to those anime, which led to other games, which led to animation, which, and now I sit in the director's chair, and it's 15 years later-ish, and it's all I do. And I mean, I haven't been on stage in about a decade. So theater was like the springboard that landed me in Crazy Town. And here we are
talking
for the second time.
Yeah. Do you miss doing theater? I mean, or.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, I definitely do. I mean, I it all stopped when I had children. Theater. I love it. It's probably still my favorite form of artistic expression. I still go to the theater, but as far as acting in it, it's just on the lower, you know, unless you're coming in as a movie star to be featured on Broadway, it's like the lower end of the pay scale as far as day players go and stuff. And I miss it horribly, but I got two kids and live in the second most expensive city in the country. And so I've kept away. I did actually go on a theater audition a couple months ago, but it was the first one in years. And I think now that I'm in my veteran stage of working in voiceover and am doing well enough, I'm going to try to take little passion-inspired vacays in the theater once a year if I can. We'll see how that goes.
That's a good idea. That's cool. I mean, you got to break it up somehow. And
yeah.
I mean, now maybe you have time for a little bit of passion project.
Yeah, I can strap in for a war game and direct it for 5 weeks straight and not see the sun and then come out the other side and maybe get to do a play for a month.
Well, but it sounds like you are installed in the voiceover industry at this point, so you're going to be a lifer, like one of these guys that's still doing it when you're like 73, right?
Yeah, it feels like lifer. I mean, I try not to get too relaxed because I've, you know, anyone who's freelance, anyone, all of my colleagues and in any kind of voiceover, you don't really know what's coming down the road. And the thing that I liken it to the most is being Magneto, you know, how he walks through space and he just makes metal planks appear in front of him. And they just hold them up and hold them up. But every once in a while, I'll hit a spot where, you know, the planks don't come up for a couple of seconds, and I'll have that moment of whoa, 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 whoa. But I guess that hasn't happened too much recently, and it feels like I'm a lifer. And I've been doing a lot of directing now, and I'm on this sort of teeter-totter spot where I could keep doing what I'm doing, and that's probably what I'm going to do, and that's try to messily juggle directing jobs and acting jobs and playing Dungeons and Dragons once a week and
right.
a million different jobs and just tap dancing. Or if I wanted to, I feel like I could probably sit my butt down at a game studio and become like their narrative lead or just director in LA full time. I don't think I'll do that, but it's nice to know that I have the option should my leg come off or my vocal cords start squeaking. I have no idea, but
well, I mean, do you prefer
long answer?
Do you prefer directing?
No, I probably prefer acting. I do love directing. I like switching back and forth. I'd probably like to keep it 2/3 acting if I could, and that's kind of what it is.
Right.
And where I'm at now, if you're constantly saying, hey, I have to run off and do this gig, I have to do this acting gig once a week or whatever, you're probably not going to get tapped to be like the person who's overseeing the whole story and doing the sort of meaty heart of a game or an animated project. You're going to be brought in to do the guys getting shot in the face or all the ancillary roles, which is fun, although it's not as rewarding as the few times I've done that. So that I love, and that's like directing theater, and is really rewarding. But right now acting probably still aces it out. And if I started doing theater again, I'm sure that I would just, I'd go, oh, that's it. I'm never going back, and just revel in it. But I'm not there now.
Why would I do this when I can do my job in my bathrobe?
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about anime dubbing. You have you haven't fully transitioned like out of that world. You still dip a toe in from time to time. On the occasional project, I made a joke when they were announcing the dubcast, I think for Fate Zero, and you were in it. I think maybe it was Sailor Moon Chris or Sailor Moon, and you were in it. And I was like, that guy's not in dubs anymore. Like, what? What is something's going wrong with his life? He's in an anime dub again.
No, before we get into how the business as a whole is doing, I love the process of dubbing anime. It is still the most challenging. In my mind, I mean, I'm sure you've had guests say it already, but, you know, you're trying to match something already made and make it believable without sounding like a robot. It's really challenging and rewarding and fun, and I do it whenever I can. It's the reason I don't do it is it comes down to me being at the stage in my life that I'm at and things like mortgage payments and kids in school and where am I going to find that money. And, I mean, it's still – it's a great job to have. It's definitely a great job to have. But if I have to pick between two or three things being offered to me, I'm going to where, I'm going to get the most for my kids, schooling.
Yeah. I mean, I was joking, but
it's always been razor thin budgets. I mean, it has always been that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the joke I was making. It's not that, gosh, you wouldn't want to work on anime, but I think the common wisdom now is that it pays garbage and you can get a much better paycheck working for a company that has money to spend on.
Right. Well,
their
I wouldn't call it garbage, but definitely less. Definitely
right.
Less.
Yeah. It's a
but there are people who do work on it that are very dear friends of mine, and I still love working on it. And if I'm willing to, go back to the theater and tap dance for a nickel, I will certainly dub anime. It just depends on if I'm. It's more like turning my nose up at it. And am I so busy with this other stuff that I'm doing? Do I have 4 hours here? Can I get away from a directing job? I'm directing a lot right now, more than I'm even used to. So being able to run off for like a role that's going to take 8 or 12 hours or something over 2 months is a little difficult these days.
Yeah. It's,
and there's less of it as far as I can. From my vantage point, it feels like less is done in Los Angeles. It feels like the circumstances of budgets and the way the market works now is most of it's in Texas, as you know.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of colleagues here in L.A. who will fly out to Texas for a week and crash on somebody's couch or hole up for a while and dub anime. There is not an option for Pop O'Brien.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, right. So basically you take the opportunities when they come up and when you can. And that's yes. cool. You sort of figured out a way to fit it into your life, you know, in the space where it goes. That's
yeah. It's one of many Jenga pieces in right. my creaky little tower.
Right. So, I mean, so 5 years ago, I feel like we were still sort of fresh off the idea, like, the bubble had burst. It was,
yeah.
you know, a couple of years out from basically the anime industry collapsing in on itself. And, you know, back then, I feel like 5 years ago, maybe this is a misreading, but you can correct me if I'm wrong. You were kind of starting, or at least partially through a transition of getting out of doing chiefly anime into doing other stuff, video games and the like.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
And was that facilitated by the collapse, or were you like already ready to maybe make that transition anyway, just if only for the paycheck?
No, I mean, it's not like I got to a point where I said, I'm going to walk away from this and go over to that and tell those people that I want them to give me, you know, really lucrative jobs. I think that 5 years ago, 10 years ago, certainly 15 years ago, I feel like dubbing anime was still sort of like the, you know, we joke about it, like the ugly stepchild of voiceover, and big casting directors and voiceover projects in L.A. would sort of not know anything about it, turn their nose up at it. But it's a whole new ballgame now, because kids who grew up thinking that Bleach was the coolest thing ever are now developers at game studios and casting things. And they, you know, in their head, they weren't like, ew, this is just anime. They thought it was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So when, you know, someone like me who's been doing it for so long comes along and starts meeting those devs who were, you know, teenage cosplayers and now are working in the industry, it became a plus instead of a ball and chain around the ankle. And I think that actors who, coming from that background, became a little more in vogue or hip or marketable, I don't know. And even, like, here's a simple example. I feel like when I first started in voiceover and was dubbing anime, I would make that sound that we all joke about. You hear in anime dubs when the characters gasp, they go... you know, you never heard that in anything,
right.
anywhere. You never heard it. And as I was coming up, I would occasionally have opportunities to audition for projects that weren't anime, that were original animation projects or something, and be a gasp in the script. And I would do that, and they go, oh, no, 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 it's a gasp. It's a gasp. Just, you know, like, just it's just inhale. And it was hard because I was starting to get conditioned to do this little thing that we,
yeah.
on the inside, jokingly call the 102. But I don't really get that comment anymore. And, in fact, I hear it. Like, if you watch I'm in Transformers Robots in Disguise, and at least half of us are doing it. So this thing – so even little quirks of the style – in anime dubs from 15 years ago has now made its way into mainstream, you know, original projects from the States.
That's really interesting. I never thought about that, like, long tail, the kids who were 15 in the early 2000s. Now they're mm-hmm. developing games and becoming artists themselves, and there's no stigma on anime for them because it was
right.
they have legit nostalgia for it. That's
absolutely.
Really cool.
And it's why I think films like Big Hero 6 were made, because, you know, those are in that movie, many other things like it are by, you know, I've got freaking Transformers Generation 1 and G.I. Joe and Cobra La bouncing around the back of my head, and those things have informed where I'm at now as a creative type in this business.
Right.
And the same is true for the developers, the writers, everybody across the board.
Yeah, I mean, just look at, like, Steven Universe. I mean, there's a show that is full of 90s anime references created by somebody who was, like, age-appropriate when Final Fantasy VII came out, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe a little younger. And it's fascinating to see the cycle kind of come around again. That's, yeah, that's really cool. So if that means that those people are casting you and other people who have a background chiefly in anime voice acting. Mm-hmm. I mean, the world of actual anime voice acting, what does that look like now? Like, how would you characterize it now?
Well, I don't know if I have an expert opinion on this, but the things that come to mind when you ask me about that is, one, I feel like I mean, so we went from the bubble to the bubble burst, and that was one step. And now we're, I mean, 5 years ago this was happening, but we're all sort of used to it happening now. With the internet and digital distribution becoming king, it's sort of wild, wild west, both with not just with anime, but with music and with TV, and everyone's trying to figure out what the future is going to be. It's hard to really know where everything is going. I mean, like, I remember when Crunchyroll first became a thing, and I looked at it and went, what is this? Mm-hmm. Now it's Crunchyroll is Crunchyroll.
Right.
So it's really hard to predict, you know, where all this stuff is going to air. And, you know, as people negotiate budgets and actors try to negotiate fair pay and all that jazz, it's hard. It's hard to tell what to ask for or what not to. Just the same way that people are figuring out. Like, I know actors who've been on Netflix TV series, and it's great, a lot of high profile, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's no residuals for that,
right?
Or there is now at a certain level, but that's new. Like a year ago, you could have been on I don't know, House of Cards, and you know you'd get paid for whatever was negotiated for your appearance, and then that's the end of the story. So it's like this weird world, and Bleach is not House of Cards. So
right.
Like, but it's a smaller microcosm of that, of trying to figure out, well, what is fair? Are they pulling, you know, are the producers just trying to keep it vague and obscure? And I'm sure they are, to, you know, sort of downplay what the profits are. It's impossible to know. So that comes to mind, and I'm no expert, but I know that that's part of it. And then, as far as like what the trends in shows are, I'll say that I feel like I'm getting out of touch with. Like, I still get hired. I've worked on 3 or 4 dubs this year,
mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I mean, you're actually one of my prime sources for what's going on the market, following you on social media. And I see a lot of the things that were hot 5 years ago are still hot.
Yeah.
Just by the jokes you make. I don't know. I don't know where the business is going to go, really. I mean, it feels pretty niche still. I feel like it went on to inspire tons of people, myself included, in the work we went on to do. But it doesn't feel like it's taken over or sort of moved in and sat at the same table as other kinds of work, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I guess my biggest question on this front is, like, do you feel like there are, like, what are the opportunities for someone who, like, will avoid the question of, like, how does someone get their start in voice acting? Because no voice actor ever wants that question, but...
They don't even know the answer.
Yeah,
really.
Right. And so I'm curious, like, somebody who, say, like, they've got their foot in the door, they've gotten a few jobs... Like,
yeah.
The life of someone who's just doing anime dubs, like, somehow just doing anime dubs, or wants mm-hmm. to be doing that. Like, what is – is there a lot of work out there for them? I mean, do they have to be basically a player at Bang Zoom Productions, you know, in order to keep getting roles, especially if they live in Los Angeles? Like, if they're not in Texas,
yeah,
they're
I mean,
not here. Like,
this I could speak to. I mean, like, the business as a whole, I got no idea. But as far as – you know, if someone wanted to pursue this kind of acting work or writing for it, if someone was passionate about doing that specifically, and that was never my thing. I mean, I was going to be a very serious stage actor, and I was seeing if I could make film and TV work, which I've had, you know, middling success with.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone said, you know, in their heart of hearts says, oh, well, I really love this medium and I want to make it work, I would tell them to study being an actor. I mean, that's the bottom line for wherever you go. And then I'd really say go to Texas. I mean, but that's if you want to get into dubbing anime. If
right.
you want to get a career as an actor and make dubbing anime a component of that, I would say come to Los Angeles. There's not that much work for anime. I mean, no one should get into it if they don't want to act.
Right.
If someone just has seen every episode of Kill La Kill, and they love it, and they want to recreate that magic. I mean, don't try to follow into this circle, because you're not gonna retire on that. It's gonna be a difficult road to hoe. And I know, without naming any names, I know people who like said that when they first got started. You know, I keep an eye on people who seem to be new and getting their foot in. And in the beginning, it's like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever, and this is all I need. And 5 years later, they're not singing that same song. I don't know. I would say learn to be an actor and then diversify and make dubbing anime one of the things you want to do.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty common. That's pretty common advice. But so the sense for that I'm getting from you is like if you're serious, like okay, I want to make anime my whole career in voice acting, mm-hmm. which no, I don't think anyone would reasonably like seriously recommend.
Yeah,
if you
and
do
I
that,
think
that
is
has to
literally only possible in Texas right now.
That has to happen in Texas.
Yeah,
yeah. And if you want to do if you're interested in that, but it's just going to be part of your career, then yeah. LA could work out for you. But
LA could work. Occasionally, things go through Canada and New York, but it's basically LA or Texas. And when I say you could do it in Texas, that's also not going to be flush. I mean, I think some of those guys who I'm friendly with are. You know, they're hustling.
Yeah.
They're tap dancing hard. And, you know, they work a lot and it's better than is definitely it's definitely a good job. But it's not like I don't know. I mean, I just feel like fans think that we sit on plush velour couch. I don't know what's fancy. I don't know what fancy is. you know, sip champagne at home at night and go, oh,
yeah,
I loved that harem comedy today.
Yeah.
Pass me some caviar. That's not going on.
Yeah.
And even, you know, acting in general. Just to scare any newcomers further. All my life, the statistics I heard, and I've heard this over and over again, I don't have any report or article that even quotes it, but my teachers would always say about 2% of actors, somewhere between 2 and 5% of actors make their living solely from acting.
Hmm.
And I'll add this, I am not, nor have I ever been one of those. 5%. I have always had, in the beginning, I had side jobs. I worked for the Amundsen and Taper Theaters here in Los Angeles. And then once I let go of that, I started writing and directing for New Generation Pictures for all their dubs. And I have been writing and or directing the whole time. You know, not every week, not every month even, but every year, yeah. There has not been a year where I've just been acting.
So you're saying something that is true across, I think, every creative profession in the modern age, which is true for my job, too, even though it's nowhere near as creative as yours. Basically, like, if you want to do this work, you need to be capable of wearing multiple hats. And if you can do writing, because everything you're saying, like, well, I've never solely done made my nut by acting. I've also done writing and directing. I mean, most people would say, like, okay, it's all in the same discipline, though. Like, you're not working a 7-Eleven at night. To pay the bills.
Right. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So, but that's true for writers too. Like if you want to make a full-time living, like as a writer, you better be an editor because that's the only way. And you better manage like 50 writers because that's the only way you're going to make a living. But that's good advice though. Like you better diversify and get some interest in some behind the scenes stuff, be able to do that too.
Yeah. And I think everybody realizes that, but you'll do yourself a favor if you know it going in.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't have a year or two where you're like, oh, I'm just going to suffer. I don't care if I'm eating ramen. Just start learning multiple skills. I mean, Shakespeare was a businessman for Christ's sakes. Just, you know, learn some trades.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. So in terms of like, have you been approached at all about the broadcast dubs that they're happening in Texas now? I think there's one happening out in Los Angeles where they're dubbing the show every single week. To keep up with the streaming schedule?
No. Yeah, I'm going to guess that Texas gave up on me like probably 4 or 5 times since I was on your show last. I would have people from Funimation go, oh, there's this part. I'm just going to give it to you. We'd love you to do it. Need you to come out. And I passed enough times that they probably stopped asking.
Well, right. Sure. But this is a new way of dubbing shows. Where they're doing
right,
it every
but they
single
would
week.
Still need me there.
Yeah,
I'm,
right.
I'm
You'd
guessing.
Have to be there for 2 months. But yeah. They're happening out. I believe one is happening in Los Angeles, and I think it's happening in LA. And I'm curious, like, are you familiar with that workflow? And is that something you would ever consider doing if it were local? Let's say.
Yeah. Sure. I would. I would probably go for a supporting role if they'd be cool with that, only because I don't know if I'd be, you know, doing a 40-hour week of directing that week. And, you know, it would hopefully be with a company. You know, sometimes people are cool with you coming by at night. Some people aren't.
Right.
So I might need to do after hours or see if they could delay till the following week. But if I were, you know, I don't know, Ichigo and Bleach and they were doing that, it wouldn't work.
Right.
Again, anyone who's listening who dubs anime, I like dubbing anime. I love it. And I'll fit it into my schedule when I can. Just juggle a lot of balls.
Yeah, right. It's more that I've heard that the scheduling on that stuff kind of is crushing people a little bit, and they're trying to they're trying to keep up with the new way that people consume anime, which is season by season as it airs in Japan, episode by episode, right. Week by week. And so
right,
dubs,
and staying ahead of the piracy curve, right?
Yeah, well, and not only that, but like, you know, dubs obviously open this stuff up to a much bigger audience. And if they can get that much bigger audience also watching simulcast week to week, well, that's great for them. And it sort of revitalizes the dubbing industry a little bit and brings it into the workaholic 21st century a little bit.
So. And that's going on in so many businesses. I mean, like, you don't go home at night. You got your office in your pocket and you're answering work emails. And just it just feels like that with everyone I know in all fields, that like work never turns off.
Yeah, it's 9 p.m. I'm working right now. Right. But yeah, so I mean that's the crush that I've heard. I was curious if that was like, okay, no, I'm staying away from that because holy crap, like 2 months or whatever, 2.5, 3 months of this. It gets a little crazy. So you're doing a lot of other stuff. Obviously diversifying out from anime. The anime that you are involved in, I mean, you tend to pick big stuff. Like, you're in Fate Zero, which was huge, and you're in Sailor Moon, obviously, which is the Nike of anime. Like, that's the Coke of anime.
I mean, Naruto just, still happens time to time.
Obviously, you're still in Naruto, which is bigger than all of that stuff.
I think that just goes back to their bottom lines. I mean, if I'm in the biggest of the anime market, it must be because somebody's like saying, all right, we want to make sure we put in slightly above average budgets to make sure that we get above average quality product here, and it means that their budgets are flush enough.
Right. Okay. So you're not taking the we'll give you $50 and a slice of pizza for 40 hours.
I cannot do that anymore.
Yeah. Right.
I cannot do that.
But that still happens. That's still very much a thing, I'm sure.
I think so. I mean, I hear stories too about. Not just anime too. I mean, this is the internet age. I mean, like, how many times do you see online, like, writers or artists especially, I see this all the time, posting about like, if you want art, they always get approached to say, oh, you know, I really can't pay you anything, but it'd be great for the exposure. And in the internet world, I feel like that is step number one. You know, you open with that.
Right. Yeah.
and that's true somewhat. I think in VO still too.
So of the anime work that you've done recently, which is, you know, a few things here and there, but they're big things. Mm-hmm. What has been sort of your favorite thing recently? I mean, that you can recall.
I liked the character in Fate, Karya.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
He's a complex dude. It was. Yeah. I didn't know. I forget how little you know about the show.
I've seen it.
Coming in just as a bit. No, I don't mean you. I mean an actor knows if they're just coming in for their role. So I would come in and see myself covered in bugs and not know what was going on. But I like the role. I mean, I think we talked about this last time I was on your show, but I play a lot of big guys now, and which is hilarious to me still because of my upbringing.
Right.
And I felt like Karya was more getting back to what I started doing in voiceover and what I felt was probably more accurate to myself. Not that I'm as tortured as that guy is, but it felt closer. I mean, that's probably the most memorable in the last year or so. And I, you know, Naruto has been around for flipping decade now. So, but he's still pretty huge for me.
Gravy Train's
coming
to
an end. There's nothing. I haven't done anything as long as I have done Gaara and Naruto. Nothing.
Wow. I mean, so that's coming to an end, like, pretty soon. Next year or something.
Yeah. I just saw some headline today where they were saying the creator of the manga has been asked to say, well, please, will you make a sequel? And his response makes it seem like he's ready to chill the hell out.
Yeah. It's like, please let me rest.
Which yeah, is, can I retire, please?
It's like a plea.
But well, I mean,
been an adventure,
even
then.
If it ends next week, it was one of the greatest. I mean, it's like one of the jewels on my charm bracelet, I guess, which is it's one of my favorite things.
Right. I mean, and when you go to cons, which you still do conventions from time to time.
From time to time, yes, I do. And I still see guys wearing giant peanuts on their back. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that still your most recognizable thing? Like if they say, like if they introduce you and they say that, like that gets the biggest response?
I guess it's one of them. Yeah, it's still pretty big. Illidan Stormrage, Gaara Persona is a huge one, which I would never have guessed when I first started working on that.
Yeah, yeah, that's big.
And what's the other one? Oh, and Gollum from Mordor is pretty well known now, too.
Yeah, yeah. So it was funny. I was playing that game. You were in, for people who don't know, you played Gollum in Shadow of Mordor, which was a video game that came out late last year. It was a big game. People expected it to suck, and it didn't. And so everyone was really surprised, and then it, you know, won all these awards and turned into a big deal. Mm-hmm. And I was playing it on a stream that I was doing, and when the character showed up, I was like, oh, that's Liam O'Brien. And the chat did not believe me. Like, they're like, no, it's not. That's Andy Serkis. 100%. Yes. You're lying. There's no way. And I was like, no, seriously. Like, it's him. And they didn't believe me. So good job. That was
Thank
great.
Thank you. I have the bad knees to prove it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, I didn't just do the voice. I did performance capture for it, too. And oh, right. I am no young buck. And so, like, I ran around like a monkey listen, Circus did it for months. But I did it for probably 6 or 7 days spread out. And, like, there was one day where they had me do just locomotions for Gollum, which means, you know, if you're Nathan Drake in Uncharted, you're basically walking across the volume a couple of different ways, running across it, ducking down. I had to run like a gorilla for about an hour and a half one day.
Ugh.
And I had a welt the size of a grapefruit on the inside of my leg, and oh my gosh.
Oh, man.
I just bathed in icy hot the next day.
Wow. Well,
and
intense.
I do it again, but yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's intense. I mean, I've seen a lot of photos where you're doing performance capture. I mean, that's sort of something you just added to your resume, right?
Yeah. Yep. I'd love to do more, too. It's the closest thing in this sort of realm to theater that we do.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fun. So, like, what's been sort of the biggest, like, have you worked on anything where you're like, I can't believe I'm in this? Obviously, the Gollum thing was huge. Anything else where you're like, I can't believe I get to do this?
Star Wars Rebels was pretty flabbergasting.
Right.
Just small role in that, but still to sit in the room and listen to people talking about Wookiees and lightsabers was pretty mind-blowing. And that's still going. So I, as far as I know, I'm still a part of it. Transformers, I've done a couple of games in the past, but to be a Decepticon on one of their animated series was flipping huge for me. And I think I really like directing on Mordor too. I directed a lot of the Uruk, the orcs too. Mm-hmm. So I love my job. I feel like I have made being a nerd, which is what I am, a very rewarding career. And I don't know how it happened, and I'm very thankful for it. And I never take it for granted.
Are your kids rebelling against your nerdiness yet?
No. In fact, I have... first of all, my wife and I raise my kids almost Amish. They don't see a lot of film or TV, so it's not like they've even seen things like Transformers, Robots in Disguise.
Okay.
Because my wife is, I think... you know, not totally crazily, you know, wants to keep technology away until they're older and let them read. And my kids read a ton, which is great. But I wanted to find a way to bond with my kids. And my daughter is still 6, so she's not ready for it. But I introduced Dungeons and Dragons because I was talking about it a little bit around the house. And he doesn't know I have a show wrapped around it. But for 3 years, I was playing this. And he's now pretty addicted to Dungeons and Dragons. I run a game for him with two of his friends from school. And I'm about to start a second kid game with another group of people. So I have definitely put a big red N on my son's chest.
Man, bringing more
My
nerds.
Daughter likes performing and sports and stuff, so we'll see if I can crack that shell, but I will try.
Oh, one's going to escape.
Yeah.
They're going to get away from your grasp. And
she'll be an MMA fighter, and I'll just stand on the side and go, yay, I think.
Well, so this other world, like you're mentioning all these titles, these are huge things. These are, you know, kind of as, in some cases, as big as it gets for voice acting. what the difference between that world and anime, like, what would you say the starkest, like, most noticeable thing in the difference between those two worlds is, between anime and sort of the super mainstream nerd culture stuff that you're working on now?
Well, as far as my part in those projects is, I think that dubbing anime is very by the numbers. You know, you have a certain length of episode. It gets broken down into little niblets of lines that have to be recorded, and they're done so. And you try to bring creativity to that process, but it's very set them up, knock them down, set them up, knock them down. And as far as acting goes, it's a very tight little space to act inside of. For games and animation, it's like taking a blindfold off and taking weights off your arms and legs, because the sky's the limit to what you can do. And there's more room to explore and play, and more of a chance for roles to become your own. What else? Games probably thrash actors more vocally.
Right.
That's a big difference. I mean, there's no, you know, obviously there's no billboards in Times Square for Yu Yu Hakusho. So there's that difference.
Yeah.
I guess those are the two that I can see from my seat
when you're
in the circus.
When you're acting and you're being directed by somebody who's, say, directing Star Wars Rebels or a Transformers episode, is the vibe different? Mm-hmm. Are they tougher on you? Is there more pressure because it's this huge thing? Or do you find it just as sort of laid back, maybe as anime can be?
Oh, man. I mean, that all depends on the people. I think I've been in anime situations where it just felt tense and joyless, and I'll never name any names, but just like, oh my gosh, we got to get this many lines an hour and we got to make sure it gets out the door. But I've had that even with video games as well. And then when I work on Naruto and I'm with Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, it's the most relaxed and joyful session I could ever hope for.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that really comes down to the people you're with. And then those people are reacting to the constraints that have been put on them. So anytime, whether it's a Japanese animated series or a video game, if the people who have hired the directors are saying, listen, we've got 10 pounds of shit in a 9-pound bag and you got to make it work, you know, that's going to stress those people out, and then it gets handed down to the actor. And if it's like when I worked on the exact opposite of all that is when I helped out on The Last of Us as a voice director, that never seemed to be an issue ever. And if you missed a line or something or didn't get it right and they played it back later, it'd be like, oh, well, let's just add it. We'll do it again. No worries.
Hmm.
But that came from the support that Sony gave to the project. Time is a crucial element. If you can take time to get it right, then you get it right. And if you don't, you don't.
Yes. If it's, we got to bang this out in 2 hours, suddenly you don't have time to do a third take or whatever.
Yeah. It's that triangle. It's fast, good, cheap. Pick two.
So from where you're sitting, it seems like, you know, as somebody who's wearing multiple hats, doing basically everything you can do in the industry of voice acting,
mm-hmm.
pretty good career choice. Worked out pretty well.
Love it. Love it. I'm not doing exactly what I thought I was going to be doing when I was 18, and I don't care.
Yeah. Well, there's probably a lot you would go back and tell yourself if you could.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
18-year-old, you probably, never, yeah.
Never. If I went back in a time machine and said, listen, when you're on the verge of turning 40, you're going to have a weekly show based on playing Dungeons and Dragons live on something called the internet, I would not have been able to process it.
Well, so let's,
strange new world.
Let's talk about that a little bit before we get to the Twitter questions here. So you're on
the
show,
please.
Called Critical Role, which it's you and a bunch of your delightful voice actor friends playing Dungeons and Dragons every week on a live stream, and the website is geekandsundry.com, right, where they can check that out?
Yes, there are a couple of ways they can see it. We stream the show live on Geek and Sundry's Twitch channel every Thursday night, starting at 7 o'clock California time. Then they immediately after, you can get that. If you're a subscriber on Twitch, you can watch it again and again if you want. Geek and Sundry then, several days later, archives every episode on geekandsundry.com, so you don't have to subscribe at all. You can just wait 4 or 5 days and see each episode. And then they've, after like a three-month-ish delay, they've started putting old episodes, one a week, onto YouTube.
Hmm.
And the last episode, the first episode, is at about almost at 250,000 views, and I don't even know what is that? I don't even know what that is. I think the only guess that I have is that it's such an underserved market. I mean, I think we're all charming and great, and Matt Mercer is some sort of inhuman, I don't know, fairy child, the way he runs the game. But I think that there's just never been anything like it. And, you know, Geek & Sundry also has a show called Titan's Grave that Will Wheaton is heading, and it's scratching the same itch and doing huge. And I can't think of any nerd hill that hasn't been claimed in victory now. Maybe this is the last one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for sure, like, once nerd stuff became the next big cash, you know, gold rush, I mean, yeah, it does kind of seem like maybe the last thing. But at the same time, it's such a simple thing, because I would imagine a lot of Dungeons & Dragons players, when they're sitting around joking around with their buddies playing Dungeons & Dragons, they're like, oh, this is really funny. Like, imagine if there were cameras and people could watch us play this. I bet it would be entertaining. The difference is, like, you guys are actually – because a lot of people think that, but it's not true.
Yeah, you know, I mean, most Dungeons & Dragons definitely have my DM is better than your DM, absolutely. I mean, the game would fall apart. If we were just to be like, if Matt were to say, I don't want to do this anymore, and we got someone else, I don't know if the show would hold. I suspect not, because he's just so good at it. And everybody is living there. You know, when we for the first game we played, and this, it started out as just us horsing around 3 years ago as a lark on my birthday. It was a birthday present to me.
Oh, wow.
And Laura Bailey, who'd never played it in her life, I played it in high school a little bit, she just suddenly was speaking in character, like, from the first word out of her mouth 2 minutes in. So it's just we're all people who are used to taking on a personality or a character, and we're running with it. And, you know, you can play Dungeons & Dragons in different ways. Some people are very creative, and it's character-driven, which I think is how we do it. Some people are just number crunchers and say, how can I get the most powerful sword and the most arrows in my quiver? And they maximize their stats, and it becomes a numbers game.
It's called min-maxing.
Min-maxing. Yes, that's the term. And I think another thing that makes the show attractive is just, you know, Dungeons & Dragons, one of the best things about it is how social it is, and you get together with your friends and you really bond with them. And it's not like we were eight strangers who were cast by Central Casting and shoved together into a reality show. It was eight friends who were getting together regularly for years, and you can see that.
Right.
And I think that comes off the screen.
I mean, long ago, you would post photos to Twitter of this weekly Dungeons & Dragons session that you had, and then it became a show. Like, it was sort of weird to see that happen. It was interesting to watch that transition. But it sounds like, I mean, the way you're talking about it, it sounds like this is incredibly fulfilling. I mean,
it's amazing. It's my favorite thing in the world right now. Right. It's got a little bit of element of theater in it. I see my friends weekly. It's like my bowling night almost. And I don't really think I've had a fan response to anything I've done quite like this. I mean, it's immediate, and we get sent piles of artwork of characters and places, of things that have just existed in our head. So, you know, we for a long time have had this little story existing in the back of our head. We had our own little Narnia and felt like, but nobody else can see it. It's real, but nobody else can see it. And now people are sending us pictures of all this make-believe stuff that, you know, we should be 15, you know, in somebody's garage or something playing this. I don't know. It feels like striking nerd gold.
Great. Well, so you guys just did a live show at San Diego Comic-Con, right?
Well, we didn't play. We've discussed playing live. I think that'll probably happen at some point. But we had a 60 or 90 minute panel at Petco Park, the Major League Stadium right next to Comic-Con, mm-hmm. which was also totally weird because it was a huge, gigantic, pristine baseball field, and we were talking about swords and dragonborn and and rolling dice in the stadium.
So that must have been a new experience.
Yes, and it was also the first panel I was on that we weren't asked how do you get into voice acting, which is fine. You guys can ask it, but it was felt very different because of that.
It would be a weird question. And I know I get into
it. And it feels like it's going to go. I mean, it feels like it's going to keep going, and I couldn't be more tickled, Zach.
That's great. Congratulations, you found a low effort way to fulfill yourself creatively.
Yeah.
No, that's excellent. That's great. I mean, it, at first glance, it's like, you know, it's literally just like three cameras, and you're sitting at a table playing Dungeons & Dragons. I mean, it's fairly like, oh, this is exactly what I thought it would be. And yet it's kind of weird that it exists in that sort of rudimentary, it's really this simple kind of format. But it's really taking off.
When we first started talking about it behind the scenes and we didn't go looking to do it, what happened was we were posting all those little videos and pictures and people were starting to hear about it. And people asked Matt about it just at conventions. Felicia Day from Geek & Sundry just called Matt in for a meeting and said, "We've heard about your game. We want to, what do you think about making it into a show?" And that was a year before we started, where they were in meetings every month figuring out how they could make it work or could they make it work. And we sort of forgot about it after 6 or 7 months. We got all excited and then just, and I think we pictured it as something more edited together, like Wheaton's Titan's Grave. And so we forgot about it. And then it happened and blew our minds. And then it wasn't at all what we thought it was going to be. And we were like, oh, we get to just keep doing what we're doing, right? Nothing changes. Nothing changes. And I can't imagine switching to the other format now because I feel like it would lose this sort of warts and all. I mean, like we are. It's definitely performance, but there's a good shot of reality TV in it, and you would lose the reality TV, I guess. I mean, God, I hate using that phrase, but you know, it's 50% elves and halflings running around, and 50%. Travis Willingham and I, you know, busting each other's balls, you know, mid-game.
Right. And I mean, so you can stop me if I'm totally off here, but the fandom for this must feel a little, existentially anyway, a little more, satisfying, because you're in those roles, you're this major fan favorite character in Naruto, and but those fans are fans of that character. Whereas, and you didn't create Gaara, but this character that you're playing in the show, that's all you. Like, they're fans of you and your creation specifically. So that must be satisfying on a different level.
Absolutely. It's a little taste of, you know, someone creating their own one-man show or, you know, like Hedwig and the Angry Inch. You know, it's like it was our own little dork game that just rattled around our own heads for 2.5 years. And we are all more or less playing ourselves, except, in a more sort of heroic bent. So, I won't elaborate. You're exactly right. It doesn't put a shadow on the other work that I do or fans of it. It feels very different. It does feel like we made something, the whole thing, the whole world, the characters and the relationships between each other and the sort of the love of this dorky thing. That people are drawn to.
All right. So do you foresee like copycat shows popping up? I bet that's going to happen.
I bet it is.
Voice
I mean,
actors.
It's the way of the world. It seems like it would happen. They're going to have a hard time getting a ringmaster as badass as ours. But I mean, there's no reason it shouldn't happen.
No, in my future, it's going to be Vic and Todd playing Dungeons and Dragons on webcams. That's my future. I can just see it.
Wouldn't they do like there's a Star Wars role-playing game. Is there a Star Trek one?
Oh,
I feel
God.
Like it would have to
of
be Star Trek,
is.
Right?
Of course there is. And you're absolutely right. Anyway, moving on. Anyway, let's move on here. So we got a bunch of Twitter questions for you.
Okay.
Let's get to those. Julian Moran asks, do you miss doing Bleach? It must have been nice to know that character for so long.
I do miss Bleach. I liked the tuberculosis-ridden character that I played. I liked how sweet he was. I liked that he wasn't shouting constantly. And I like how much of a mother he was to Ichigo.
Schrodinger's Matt asks, in live action, chemistry between the actors can sometimes make or break. I know voice acting is different, but in your experience, have you ever felt that way about your fellow voice actors? And in that they have elevated your own work in some way.
Do I think that other actors I've worked with have elevated my performances?
Specifically in voice acting, because it's so rare for you to work directly together, like in the same booth or whatever. But have you ever felt like your performance is being elevated?
It's hard to answer because the amount of times that I'm with other people is much smaller than when we're by ourselves. And getting chemistry from two actors who are coming in days apart is something that doesn't entirely have to do with the actor. I mean, so much rests on whether it's Bleach or if it's Justice League Unlimited. I mean, that's a bad example because the actors are together. But I've worked on animated non-anime projects where I'm by myself, video games, And whoever the director is has to be savvy enough to be thinking, actor A is going to be at this level with this temperament, and he's probably going to, I'm probably going to direct him to inflect here or have this color. And if actor B doesn't do it one of a couple ways, it is not going to work. And the audience will just go, oh, they're not acting that very well. So really the director for anime dubs, at least, is like a third partner in the scene. But there's no question that when I'm with other actors, that they're goosing up my performance. I mean, Troy Baker is in a lot of things because he's a brilliant actor, and he is definitely intense to stare in the eye when I did performance capture for Shadow of Mordor. So no question. I mean, in any artistic endeavor where actors are together, if you got an actor who's kind of lame or his attention is wandering, or they just don't have a lot of energy, they will affect your performance and deflate you a little bit. And if they're amazing, they'll engage you and or turn you on or piss you off and inform your performance. So, yeah, no question.
Divine Nega asks, what's your favorite villain role that you've worked on?
Gaara was a villain, and he was really satisfying. I really liked doing Red Skull for this traveling almost amusement park show that's going around America, because they really, I was directed and we played it like really quiet and subtle. And then it's one of the only instances, I think, where they animated everything to the performance I did. You know, they used video reference. And so when I saw it back, it was Skull's face moving with my intention and expression. So that was pretty wild.
Oh, that's cool.
And Gollum's not really a villain, really.
Yeah.
It's more of a tragic character.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I'll say Gaara.
See, I was going to say maybe Man-C in Technolon.
Man-C is a son of a bitch and got what was coming to him.
Yeah. I love going through voice actor resumes, the credits as they get more and more obscure. Screaming
oh, yeah.
Man in and background. it's
I hear a lot, too. People be like, oh, and Liam O'Brien, and look at the size of his IMDb page. And there is definitely a lot of cool stuff in there, but there's a lot of padding from being Soldier B getting shot in the face in a video game.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that. So,
You talk a lot about doing the war games, which I guess you're in demand for shooters. So, I mean, you know, an average record on a shooter, it sounds like it shreds your vocal cords and you're doing it forever and you're saying the same stuff over and over again. Is this kind of like the factory work of voice acting at this point? Like another day,
yes,
another day on the job, you know?
It absolutely is. If they find that if people in the industry find that you have the stamina and sound good and are, you know, relatively efficient, they're going to keep asking you to do it. And they have kept asking me to do it. It's just the rise of the first person shooter. You know, 10 years ago, there weren't as just 50% of the market is running around shooting somebody
right
now. And they need people to go and stay down and all that stuff. It's not the same things, but it's the same. It's the same type of thing with different little tweaks here and there.
Yeah, right. But I mean, that obviously keeps the lights on and your mortgage paid and all that stuff. So,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I haven't done as much of it this year. I just did for the first time on a game that I'm directing. They threw me in to do it. I can't say what it is, but I was started shouting. I went, oh yeah, I used to do this all the time. Okay. I remember how to do this. Get that guy.
Like, what do you remember what the last one you were in that might actually be out now?
Oh, well, Arkham.
Arkham, right.
I'm corrupt cop all over that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you get to do any like corny Brooklyn style accents for that stuff?
That's all I did.
Oh, yeah.
It's not corny. I'm from New Jersey, man. That's my real. That is my native accent.
I played that game and I love driving around and hearing the corny sort of cartoon thugs deliver their Brooklyn accents. I'm sure that wasn't
well,
you, but
you might have heard me. And if you heard me, I was talking like the guys I went to high school with. So
oh, there you go. Now I know.
Yep.
Now I won't be like, man, they sound like cartoon gangsters out there. Which
because many people in my home state of New Jersey do sound like cartoon gangsters.
Well, that's excellent. I love that. That makes me happy inside, so it's good. Frankly, it's a little bit more apropos, considering they're using the like cognitive dissonance voice of Batman from the animated series, and that always throws me way off because he looks like a Todd McFarlane character. Like,
yeah.
He looks all like, you know, Rob Liefeld, like... muscle and the
ripped. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that gentle Batman voice from 1994 or whatever is coming out of him, and it's just I don't know, man. My brain just goes, nope, this isn't right. Okay. Let's see here. F-Zero now asks, what's the most frequent misconception about voice work that you've had to deal with?
Besides that we choose the roles. How do you choose your roles? Why did you choose that one? Why didn't you choose the other? We barely have any sway on what we get. Is one. And also, I already said I don't feel like I live a fancy life. Right. I might if I didn't live in Los Angeles, but the cost of living here is high, folks. Mm. But mainly, you know, you just when you're an actor, you just freaking it's like it's the slot machines. I audition. I do about 20 auditions a week. I know that I'll probably see somewhere between a 1% and 3% return, I guess.
Right.
I don't know. I don't have exact numbers, but you just got to keep pulling that slot machine lever and occasionally coins spit out.
I go through that thought process every now and then where I'm like, you know, if I lived in Arizona, I would live as a king in a palace that cost $800 a month. Los Angeles.
That kind of thing, it'll drive you to drink, man.
It will. You're right. Okay. we got a lot of questions about this, and I guess we'll wrap with this. But a lot of people really loved you in Monster, which is sort of tragically unreleased. Like, you can't buy it. They never finished releasing it. And they sort of
is that true? You can't see the whole dubbed series anywhere?
I think it might be streaming somewhere, but you can't buy the DVDs. Like, they didn't. And Viz lost the license to it. So it's kind of floating out there in the ether at this point, and people are sort of hoping for, like, a relicense. But, I mean, that role was a long time ago, but people loved that show. And I was curious if, you know, how you felt about that now, if you still consider it a highlight of your resume, and, you know, if you could put your effort behind, like, any kind of effort behind, like, yes, make this available again, would you?
Well, I have zero power to make that happen.
Right,
but
sure.
I you've just made me sad. I didn't know that it farted out.
Yeah.
And no, I loved working on that. I mean, I yell so much of anime was, you know, ninjas flipping off the roof and stuff. And not just Naruto, you know, it's a lot of like, take this.
Mm-hmm.
I spent a lot of my years doing that. And to get such a serious role taking place in Germany, of all places, or starting in Germany, and getting back to sort of a style of performance that I was used to from my earlier career, it was really rewarding. And you have just bummed me out.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to end this on a down note.
No, that's – or did anyone pick up the license and they just haven't done anything with it? Or
it hasn't
just
been picked
sitting
up again. Yeah. The thing is, like, everyone had very grand plans for Monster. Like, it was on the Sci-Fi Channel briefly, and then it didn't come back after a short period of time. But then there was going to be a live-action version of it by Guillermo del Toro that was going to be on, like, HBO, and then that didn't happen. And so after a while, and the DVD sales were poor, so they yanked it. Viz didn't finish it. It's one of those things anime fans like to bring up whenever you mention Viz. Like, well, they didn't finish Monster. And it's like, okay.
Bummer, dude.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sure somebody will pick it up. Like, it's just sitting there completely dubbed. One of these little companies that re-releases stuff on DVD will totally grab it at some point.
And Funimation's not going to – doesn't it felt like Funimation was just scooping up all the leftovers when everything went kerplooey.
Yeah, not Monster.
A couple of years back. No.
That's a drama for adults. Like, it's not the anime target audience.
Yeah.
that belongs on, like, HBO or, you know, some other deep cable channel late at night.
Yeah.
Being a fan favorite of people who are in their late 20s. You know, that kind of thing. No, but people loved it, so you should take that away from it. That
well, thanks, guys.
Everyone
loved
it.
Thank you. I loved it, too.
Yeah.
Patrick Seitz did a very good job directing that.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Okay, so that actually wraps us up. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us after all these years. We'll try to make it less than 5 until the next time, but it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Zach. Anytime you want me here, I'll come back.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Liam for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it. And I'll see you all next week.